right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA Podcast, off-season special edition. My name is Keith. I'm here alone. Chuck and John will be back very soon, and we will give you another regular segmented program. I mean, we just gave you one last week. It's the off-season, for goodness sakes. Anyway, I hope you guys are enjoying the Olympics and the latest five-hour hardcore history podcast. I waited a whole week from our last episode, so you'd have a chance to get started on that. But if you haven't started yet, just put that off a little longer until you are done with this. Those battles from 400 BC are not going anywhere. Today's very special guest is Chris Harrington of the Memphis Commercial Appeal. We will not discuss any of the mesmerizing indoor volleyball I've been watching. We also will not discuss any of the smoke and allegations and tawdry details of the Grizzlies' PA announcer getting fired, but we will have a special off-season Grizzlies epilogue. But before we get to Chris, I want to tell you guys about Fan Essentials. Fan Essentials is a subscription service for serious fans that want unique team gear sent to their house every month. They have boxes starting at $14.99. Enter the code FBBF and you get a discount, and we get a couple bucks back to help keep the lights on at the Baby Dungeon. So go to fanessentials.net and get all the essentials you need. Now get your skip button ready to jump straight to Chris, because an annoying commercial is coming in 3, 2, 1. My guest today, I couldn't be more excited about, because he does a tremendous job covering the Memphis Grizzlies for the Memphis Commercial Appeal. He's a writer and columnist for the Commercial Appeal. He's the host of the Pick and Popcast, also has the Pick and Popcast column. So, Mr. Chris Harrington, how are you this fine morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing real good. So you post a daily column at 9:01 every day, right?
Yeah, I do that on all things Memphis. Which sometimes includes the Grizzlies, and then I'll do, during the season, I'll do the weekly long-form pick and pop just on the Grizzlies and NBA. But day in, day out, I'm all things Memphis these days.
That's good. So I'm assuming with having to post at 9, you're a pretty early riser?
I'm sadly a very early riser. Sometime between 5 and 6, I'll get up and get started.
Yeah. Whew, that's brutal. When you get up that early, are you just because it is our gimmick, are you a daily breakfast eater?
I am not. I should be. If I'm working at home, I'll get a quick bowl of cereal. If I'm at a coffee shop, which I tend to do a lot, I'm having a pastry and a latte.
Yeah.
But I do my real breakfast on the weekends. I make grits most Sundays.
You say grits?
Yeah. I like breakfast cooking, but I don't do it during the week.
Well, let's get one thing out of the way first of all. Memphis or Nashville?
Memphis,
no, I'm kidding.
Far.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
I thought we could do a whole half an hour on that.
We could do another whole half an hour. But let's
right.
let's do this one on the Grizzlies. So most Grizzlies fans seem to be pretty excited for this off season, and it seems like most even national media are giving them a pretty good analysis or grade for what they did. Do you share that opinion? I feel like as fans or people who cover the Grizzlies, like we normally are optimistic about it. So do you think they did as good as they could, or is there more lacking or something else you wish they did?
I think they took on a lot of risk, but I think in the position they were in, it was the right thing to do. They were not in a position to blow it up and rebuild, not with the Gasol contract and not with the picks that they owed. And so what they needed to do was maximize their upside in the short term. And it takes, you have to take on risks in order to do that. And so, you know, is the Conley contract a risk? Yes. Is the Parsons contract a risk? Yes. But I think they made the correct decision to say, let's do whatever we can do to make our ceiling the highest right now, even if there's risk that goes along with it. And if that was the goal, I think they achieved that goal as well as they reasonably could this summer.
So you mentioned the Mike Conley contract, which has been, you know, everyone reports how it is the biggest in NBA history. How do you explain to kind of the semi-serious or casual fan who comes up to you and asks you the, like, because I get some of that where people are like, tell me, but why the Mike Conley thing? Is that a disaster? And I'm like, no, it's not a disaster. But can you, how do you explain to people who ask you, like, what's the deal with Mike Conley being the highest paid player?
Well, the weird thing about the NBA is that, as you know, all player movement, the rules that govern player movement are financial rules. And so you can't reasonably judge player movement outside the financial context. On the other hand, I think it's entirely reasonable for casual fans not to want to know all of that.
Right.
And so that is sort of a tricky conversation to have. I just try to tell people that, like, you know, A, that, you know, that the roles are financial, and B, that we just happen to be at a period where the landscape is shifting. And that shift sort of is going to cause some odd things to happen timing wise. And so, you know, the contracts are only really meaningful within the context of the league relative to that context. And that context is changing rapidly. So, you know, what looked like a crazy deal last summer doesn't look as crazy this summer. And what looks crazy this summer won't look as crazy next summer. And after next summer, it'll sort of flatten out a little bit and you can sort of recalibrate what's normal. But right now, the whole idea of normal is just sort of, you know, it's a shifting ground. And so it's like Mike Conley himself said when he had his press conference, he said, you know, I'll take the hits for it now. And then a year from now, there'll be lots of other guys who can take those hits because he'll go from having the biggest contract in NBA history to, like, you know, the 10th biggest or whatever a year from now.
Right. I was trying to explain it to some, or I guess one way I come to terms with it is, well, it's strange because I remember when Mike Conley signed his first contract, one of the things in retrospect that I actually got right, a lot of times I'm wrong, but back then I really actually liked the deal. I thought the deal was a good, you know, like it was going to be a good value and ended up playing out. But so now that he signed this big one, it's kind of like, I explain it, if they didn't sign Mike Conley, that's a disaster. So signing Mike Conley, this big contract, could actually be a huge albatross in a couple years if he ends up not being healthy enough to contribute, you know, year in or game in, game out. But it also was the only chance of the Grizzlies being good. Like, do you agree with that? Like, it was kind of...
Yes. No. If they weren't able to re-sign Conley, that would have necessitated an entire change of direction and blowing up the team. And as I said before, they weren't set up to do that.
Right.
And so they really didn't have much of a choice. Now, I do think it's reasonable to criticize them for not somehow getting at least somewhat of a better deal with Conley, given that there were three or four free agents of a similar caliber in a similar situation. He was the only one who got a full max. There apparently are some stipulations on the back end relative to games played. And you know, there's some protection in case things just go terrible. But generally speaking, if he stays healthy, it is fully guaranteed.
Right.
And that's not a deal that Nicholas Batum got. It's not a deal that Al Horford got. It's not even a deal that DeMar DeRozan got, although he got close enough. And so given that no one else got that deal, given no one else could give Mike Conley even close to that deal, and given the lack of viable options, even just from a basketball standpoint, for him to go elsewhere, I am frankly surprised they did not negotiate some smaller or more protected deal.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. I thought it was a little surprising, but again, I don't know. They've hitched their wagons to their guys. Like, we know who the guys are. It's going to be Parsons. It's going to be Gasol. Going to be Conley. And if those guys can play, they should be pretty good. So after this offseason, and it seems like they're pretty much done because they have 15 guaranteed and they signed four other guys for camp.
Right.
What are your expectations coming into the season?
I think the range of possible for this team is actually very wide. I think if they catch all the breaks they could catch, both in terms of their team and some of the teams around them, like all the reasonable breaks, like they could get as high as second in the West. I mean, that's not shocking. That wouldn't be shocking to me because I think the Spurs are going to slide back a little bit. I think the Clippers have very minimal depth and lots of chemistry questions. And I don't think there's any other team that is clearly better than a healthy Grizzlies would be. And so I think if everything breaks right, they could be the second seed in the West. I also think that if Gasol struggles to return from the foot injury, if Parsons struggles coming back from this knee injury that he's still rehabbing, if Conley, you know, can't play a quality 70-plus game season because of health issues, if some of these unproven young vets and rookie guys don't coalesce into a decent bench, it wouldn't be shocking if they missed the playoffs either. So I think the range is like from like 2 to 10 in the West. Like I think they have one of the wider ranges possible of any team in the league this year.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm very pessimistic on this season, which is really weird for me because I feel like the last, say, 3 or 4 years, I've been overly optimistic. Like I've gone into every season like Vince Carter's the final piece, or Brandon Wright will be great off the bench. And so then they've shown upside and they've shown, promise. But so this season, everyone seems to be kind of fired up. And I'm terrified of the bench. Assuming your starters are Conley, Tony Allen, Parsons, Zebo, and Gasol, you have 5 starters who are either old or injured. And then behind them, I see nothing. Like, I see unproven players, and then a 40-year-old Vince Carter, who may or may not be on the team, and then Brandon Wright coming off injury. Like, I'm mortified of the bench.
Your 10 non-starting players on the roster, and 10's a lot of players, right?
Right.
That's a lot of guys. Of those 10, there's only one that is a proven NBA player in the prime of his career.
Right.
And that's Brandon Wright,
right,
who played 12 games last year. And I think it's a really odd fit. I think he's a really talented player, but he has such a specific skill set. You have to figure out how to maximize that in a team context, which Dallas was able to do. He was not as good when he went to Boston and when he went to Phoenix. He was not that good when he played for the Grizzlies last year. They have to figure out how to use him to maximize his strengths. And even if they do that, that's one guy out of 10 who is a proven NBA player in his prime. And so, no, I mean, they really need, a Troy Daniels, a James Ennis, a Wade Baldwin. I think JaMychal Green's a pretty good player, but he hasn't totally proved it over a full season. They need 2 or 3 of those guys to be quality rotation players. And that's just to give them, a league average bench. And that's to say nothing of the questions in the starting lineup. So, yeah, no, like I said, I think there's way more downside than a lot of fans are allowing. And the other part of that, which you did mention, I think it's wild how people are just assuming Marc Gasol is going to be back to being Marc Gasol.
Right.
I mean, he's 31 years old. He's 7'1", 260 pounds, and he's coming off a broken foot. And people are just assuming like it's going to be back to normal.
And that
might happen. It's possible, but you can't count on that until you see it.
And he also looked, we kind of forget because he got hurt, but he looked lethargic for most of last year compared to his normal standard.
No, he was not good early last year. That was one of the things that, when Gasol and Conley sort of complained about, what was happening with the team early on, the asterisk on that is, they were part of the reason why the team wasn't as good early on. I tend to think what happened with Gasol early last year was less about sort of an aging trajectory that would necessarily continue than about him coming into the season a little out of shape and a little too complacent.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you set the foot injury aside, I think he could get back to all NBA caliber play. I don't think he's past the point age wise where that is off the table. I think the question to me is the foot injury and then his demeanor and dedication to being that. I think the dedication is probably back. The question is whether the foot's going to hold him back.
That makes sense. One of our regular co-hosts, John, during the regular season, he's also a Grizzlies fan. He was clamoring for the Grizzlies to work out some sort of lifetime contracts for Mario Chalmers and Lance Stephenson. So at this point, how surprised are you that neither one of those guys is on an NBA roster?
Well, with Chalmers, I mean, Chalmers will be on a roster. I think at his age, coming off that injury, there's not a lot of incentive for teams to give him a decent contract.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if he proves his ability to play, he will be in the NBA next season. I would not rule out him being with the Grizzlies next season. Given the uncertainty of backup point guard, given his relationship with the new head coach, given that he is still out there, I would not rule out a return to the Grizzlies until he signs with another team.
Right.
As far as Lance Stephenson, I mean, the Lance Stephenson stuff was wild because there were so many people in Memphis who had, who followed the team and in a professional or semi-professional basis, who had somehow convinced themselves that the Grizzlies should bring him back on that team option, which is 9.4 million, which to me was just abject insanity. Like, it was totally crazy to think that they would do that. I actually have an outstanding bet with another media person who's going to owe me a big lunch when he finally signs somewhere for, like, you know, $500,000 or whatever. That was never going to happen. But given how crazy the market was and the sort of lack of wings, yeah, I'm surprised he isn't signed somewhere. You know, I did not think it would be all the way down to taking a minimum deal or just trying to stay in the league, which some people did think that that's how bad it was. But I think, you know, he played well in Memphis late in the season in a very unstructured environment without other good players around him. It was like the perfect scenario to let Lance be Lance, just give him the ball and let him go. And even in that context, his minutes and playing time declined over the course of the season because the coaches just got tired of it. I don't think it's winning basketball. He's a guy who needs to have the ball and to freelance with the ball because that's what his strength is. But he's not good enough to really do that consistently at the NBA level, not when there are other good players around him.
Right. I was,
and so I'm not the biggest Lance fan, but I do think, I mean, he's obviously an NBA, you know, he's an NBA rotation caliber talent. And I'll be surprised if he actually does end up in China or wherever and not on a roster.
Right. I was super surprised. I was cleaning out my DVR and I ended up watching the Pelicans game was still on there where he scored 33 points in like 30 minutes.
Right.
And it was just like, this guy's on fire. Like no one can stop him. I mean, clearly it was a borderline D League game with Anthony Davis involved, you know, like out there, but
right.
I was still, it's kind of blown me away that no team has been like, we need something off the bench. You know, this guy can help, but yeah.
Well, in addition to sort of the realization of his limitations on the floor, I mean, there are issues with him off the floor. I mean, his reputation has not been helped by
right.
by his last couple of seasons. And, you know, I don't want to characterize the guy too much,
right.
but I think there are a lot of front offices around the league who just look at him, all things involved, and sort of just wonder, obviously, if it's worth the trouble.
Right. I don't think you're saying anything because obviously the guy is sitting there unsigned, you know, into August. So there does seem to be something. Among the new guys that we briefly touched on, the guys who we think need to step up, like Andrew Harrison, Wade Baldwin, Troy Daniels, James Ennis, which one of those guys do you think, well, actually let's throw out James Ennis because he's actually played a basketball game. Like he's actually started an NBA game. I think Troy Daniels maybe has one start.
Right.
So of those guards of Troy Daniels, Wade Baldwin, Andrew Harrison, what are you looking for from them? And which one do you think maybe is going to get the most burn or contribute the most?
Well, Ennis is sort of an interesting question because you sort of seen, there's sort of been three phases of James Ennis through two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
His rookie season with Miami, he was an actual rotation player. Like he wasn't good, but he was a viable, like league average kind of bench player as a rookie. He came to Memphis and, you know, the few times he got on the floor, he was totally invisible. He looked like nothing. He hit a few spot up threes, but otherwise was just running up and down the floor, not impacting the game at all. Wasn't even that good when they sent him down to the D League. And then he got that late season sort of little audition with the Pelicans, which was similar to sort of the Lance Stephenson end of the season with the Grizzlies, where he's just, you know, he's able to play a big role on a team without a lot of talent around him and sort of went nuts. But he went nuts in a way that I think is suggestive of, unlike Lance Stephenson, he went nuts in a way that was sort of suggestive of a good role player because it wasn't a high usage, like dominate the ball. It was a lot of 3-point shots. It was a lot of stuff at the rim. It was not a lot of, you know, run the ball through him. And so if he can knock down threes, run the floor, play physical defense, I mean, that's sort of your classic sort of role player situation. I think it's notable when the Grizzlies let him go, they let him go because Dave Yeager didn't want to play him and they had injury issues and they needed to free up a roster spot.
They needed Ryan Hollins.
Right.
Yeah.
The front office, I can tell you, was very reluctant to let James Ennis go because they had control. They had a team option, essentially, or non-guaranteed on him for this season, this coming season, for very cheap. And their plan all along was to bring him back this season for basically $1 million and say, well, this is our fourth or fifth wing, and we've got him for cheap. And they hated giving that up to free up that roster spot. And even when they gave him up, they told me directly, like, you know, we may bring him back, even though we gave him up, we may bring him back next season. I think it's notable that they brought him back after hiring a coach who had coached him before. And so I think the decision to bring him back after hiring Fizdale is portends very well for James Ennis getting a very, very good shot to be a significant player for the team. But again, he's like, I don't know how old he is. He's like 24, 25, 26. He's not young.
Right.
Maybe he's 23. I don't know. But he didn't go straight from college to NBA. He went overseas a little bit. So he's an older guy, even for a third-year player. He hasn't really established himself. But I think you know, he's sort of a young vet who actually has some NBA time under his belt, unlike a lot of those players on that bench. He can play multiple positions. He's a wing player, which they really needed on the wing because I think they're going to want to play more small ball with Parsons at the four. And to do that, you've got to find guys to soak up minutes at the two and the three. So I think there's a big opportunity for Ennis. But, you know, again, he hasn't really done it.
Right. And what about the backup point? You think it's going to be Andrew Harrison's or Wade Baldwin's, or they're just going to swap it up and see who can dribble?
My impression before the draft had been that if they drafted a point guard at 17, which I thought I wrote before the draft, there was a very good chance they would do so, given the players who were going to be available in that range. My impression was that if they drafted a player at 17 who was a point guard, they would be penciling that player in to be their number two point guard next season. Mm-hmm. That they weren't going to draft at 17 and then spend free agency money in any significant way at that spot. And that's what happened. A lot of people in Memphis seem to get the idea that Harrison is more likely to have that role going into the season than Baldwin, because he's older, because he has a year of D-League under his belt, because frankly, neither of them look that good in the summer league. I don't believe that. I mean, I don't know what the team's going to do, but I would be more willing to roll the dice on Baldwin right out of the gate than Harrison, because I think they're both limited, but I can see it with Baldwin. I can see the higher level of ability that he has, and I'd be willing to take the lumps to try to speed up his development. You know, he could be bad for 3 or 4 months. I wouldn't give up on him because I think it's there. I think it's going to come in time.
Right.
It would not surprise me if they look up, much like they did last year early in the season, and say, we can't play Mike Conley 35 minutes a night. We're trying to win. We got to have somebody with some experience. I mean, they brought Tony Roten in for training camp. I think Tony Roten's more of a two than a one, and he's been pretty bad when he's played.
Right.
I don't know that that's the answer. That's why I wouldn't roll out a Mario Chalmers come mid-November if it looks like he's ready to play and he'll come in for a vet minimum or something like that.
Right.
But I'd be willing to give Wade Baldwin a long leash. It's me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm an irrational Tony Roten fan. I recognize he is bad when he plays basketball, but I still kind of adore him.
Right.
But no, I'm with you. So when you mentioned Chalmers thing, like that's a hope of mine, is if they do bring back Chalmers, that would mean that Wade Baldwin would be thrown into the fire and would be forced to actually get minutes, which is something that Grizzlies teams haven't done in the past with the rookies. And so then maybe near the end of the year that Chalmers would be ready to play. And I also agree that I'm not a huge Andrew Harrison fan. Like, I'm very nervous that, like, I'm not quite sure what he does at the NBA, but he is going to have the opportunity to prove that he belongs, because it looks like they will be thin in the backup positions. Can we talk about Drew Graham, the Grizzlies' head athletic trainer, who, according to Twitter, is that official? According to Twitter, he was let go.
That was tweeted by my colleague Ron Tillery, but it has not been followed up with an official story or an official response from the team. And so I don't know that that's something
that is actually going to happen.
A definite thing at this point.
Right.
I will say that given all the injury problems they had last season and given the coaching change,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I sort of expected some changes in staffing.
Right, that makes sense.
So if something along those lines does happen, it would not be a big surprise to me, but I don't really want to go into it given that it hasn't.
Right.
Doesn't seem to have technically happened.
Right. Well, I'll go into it briefly. You don't have to. It is funny because it is, like the Grizzlies widely reported had the 28 players. And then the big issue was when Marc Gasol went down, there was like a report that his foot hurt that, you know, like that night, and it was a question whether he should play or not, and then he cleared. So,
well, I mean, when I wrote a column about it after the injury, I mean, I didn't put the two tweets up. Like, there were two tweets from Ron Tillery, my colleague, who's the beat writer, and one tweet was before the game that Gasol was having foot soreness,
right.
And then there was another tweet, you know, 12 hours later after the game that Gasol had broken his foot, and that's not a good
that's
look.
Not a good
it's,
combo.
It's just not.
Yep. Do you know, speaking of the injury prevention, do you know if the franchise is maintaining its relationship with P3, which is the injury prevention specialists athletic camp they went to last year?
I haven't heard anything otherwise. I assume yes, but I don't know for certain.
I mean, I know you can't blame injuries specifically on anything. Like, we don't know why they occur, but it did seem a weird connection. Not a connection, but just, I don't know, ironic that they did go to this injury prevention thing, and then they had most of their big guys go down with weird foot and leg injuries. Where it was wondering,
well,
like,
it wasn't just Gasol. I mean, there was a lot of weirdness around the Brandon Wright situation,
right?
And there was enormous weirdness around the Jordan Adams.
Oh, absolutely.
And so there's a lot of red flags with injuries on this team last year.
Yeah. All right. Well, to wrap up, I'm curious. How long have you been in Memphis?
I've been back in Memphis. I went to high school here in Memphis,
okay.
And then I went away for college. Mm-hmm. And then I moved back in 98, I guess. And so I've been back ever since.
Have you been covering the Grizzlies since like the start of the Grizzlies? Of the Memphis iteration?
I did not cover the team year one. Mm-hmm. I was the music and film editor of the Alt Weekly in town when the Grizzlies moved here.
Right.
And I was one of like 15 people in Memphis who was a rabid NBA fan before Memphis had an NBA team.
Right.
Like, I mean, you should see my college era like fantasy league. Like, we made up our own rules, our own constitution, multi-year contracts,
yeah.
Like, you know, rising salaries, rookie drafts, free agency, like, you know, it's a totally ridiculous thing.
Right.
And so I was an NBA junkie, you know, way back. And was one of the few in Memphis who probably really was before we had a team. For some stupid reason, after the team moved here, I decided I was too busy with my real job to deal with it. but to be frank, I wasn't happy with the coverage we had the first season. And so I just went to my boss and said, give me the media pass, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And sort of started doing it as a sideline. Started a blog, sort of a hobby column, basically, mm-hmm. as sort of secondary to my actual job. And over time, it evolved into sort of an actual part of my job when I was at the Alt Weekly.
That's cool. Yeah, I was similarly. I was going to ask that. So you grew up. You were a big NBA fan pre Grizzlies,
It was. I mean, junior high, high school. I was a college fan initially, more of one, because I grew up in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But by junior high, high school, NBA started to take over from college. And then when I was in college, I lived in an NBA city in college. And then I became a total NBA junkie while I was in college.
That's great. So of all the years of the Grizzlies, do you have a favorite? Who's your favorite all-time Grizzly? Points are awarded for more obscure or bad players.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't say these were my favorites, but I've got a thing of like overrating some of the non-drafted free agent guys.
Yeah.
Like, I will always believe that Torrance Kinsey should have been a good NBA player.
Okay. All right.
That was a guy who I just thought was going to be a really good player. So that's a guy I always kind of liked. Even though he had some pretty bad off the court behavior, which I certainly cannot condone, I have a soft spot for Hamed Adati.
Oh yeah.
Because he was legitimately better than Hashim Thabeet, like not even in like a funny way. Like he was just better.
Right.
And he's also the only in 15 years or whatever, he's the only Grizzlies player who's ever written me a handwritten thank you card.
That's great. I adore Hamed Haddadi. He strangely looks exactly like my older brother. It's a weird. My brother is a the 6'4" American version of Hamed Haddadi. But
nice.
One of my earliest, I don't know if you remember this guy. I was sure this guy was amazing and never got to play, was Antonis Fotsis from Greece.
That was year one.
Yeah, he was like a combo forward. He threw a couple behind the back passes and hit a three once, and I was like, "This guy's incredible." But yeah, he never.
Yeah, his early Grizzly like European Man of Mystery swagger got stolen by Gordon Juracek a little bit.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorites. Who wore black socks.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like the black sock look of Gordon Juracek.
Gordon was solid. I got real excited recently playing the latest iteration of NBA Jam, and you could unlock Antonis Fotsis for like Panathinaikos or whatever Greek team he was on. Well, all right, so finally, I know you cover some food for the commercial appeal, like you write about food there in Memphis. So
I do a little bit of everything. Yeah,
I have a specific request, or I need a recommendation, a food recommendation, but I need it for someone in my situation, which is flying down I-40, trying to get to the pyramid, or I mean the FedEx Forum, in time for a game. Like, I always know these good food recommendations, but I need something where if I roll up at say 5:30 or 6 and want to be in my seats by 7, what food can you recommend for me to grab?
If you want to, like, you know, if you want to be a real glutton, like eat in the car and really speed yourself
okay.
up, you got to just get a burger from Topps Barbecue, go through the drive-in. The best burger in Memphis is from the fast food barbecue chain, Topps Barbecue.
I've never had that. So yeah, that's a good one. The Topps Barbecue Topps hamburgers, barbecue, man, the way to go.
Yes. They get their meat fresh from Charlie's Meat Market here in town.
Okay.
It is well seasoned. It is cooked to order. It is the best burger in Memphis, and it's you can get it through the drive through of a barbecue place.
That's perfect. Well, yeah, we will definitely. I'll definitely hit that up on my next time coming to Memphis when I'm running late. Hey, so thanks a lot, Chris, for your time. Do you want to plug your Twitter or where they can read your stuff online?
My basketball stuff on Twitter is at HarringtonNBA, and I'll tweet everything out there. If you go to the commercialfill.com site under Grizzlies, there's a pick and pop tab that collects my Grizzlies columns there.
That's perfect. Well, thanks so much for your time, Chris, and we really enjoyed having you.
All right. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, Chris. All right, that was good stuff from today's guest, Chris Harrington. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at HarringtonNBA. Hopefully you already follow us at Fast Break Break. Go check out hardwoodparoxysm.com, like us on Facebook. Maybe write us an iTunes review this week if you haven't done that yet. Check us out on rabble.tv. You guys should hopefully all be rabbling the Olympics. All right, thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.